just hit big. Maybe I can do that. Did that work? He's been giving me instruction on all of these technological aspects, so hopefully we can work through our study tonight. We have several visitors. Delighted that you've come. The study tonight is a little different than what we might be normally accustomed to. We want to focus on Jesus Christ. And Greg, I couldn't have asked for a better song to be led than Pure in Heart and Set Our Minds on Things Above. That's exactly what we're trying to do. And yet we're living in a 21st century where we're bombarded with all kinds of technology, which can be very good or may not be so good. I want to suggest to you that we live in a highly stimulated world, visually and in an audio way. And I'm going to ask you to critically evaluate those of you who are younger, especially. Ella, I'm going to pick on you for a minute here. I want you to tell me tonight whether it was fair or not. Okay? And then moms and dads, you're going to need to be evaluating, was this fair or not? Because it's really easy to try to take a club and beat technology, especially if we don't necessarily care for some of the more recent uses of it. But I would like to suggest to you, God's been using visuals and audio for a long, long time. And as you can see before you with the Garden of Eden, there was a spectacular visual and audio presentation of the power of God. The heavens and the earth both declare the glory of God. When there was the thunder and lightning on Mount Sinai and the people said, please, Moses, you talk to God. Please don't have him talk to us directly. God was making a splendorous presentation of his might and his power and his glory. And when Jesus would say, peace, be still, on that raging storm on the Galilee, what a presentation both of the audio and visual demonstration of the power of God. The transfiguration put men on their faces, and Peter, James, and John were in awe of the splendor of God. And I would suggest to you that the very best movie ever was the Book of Revelation. You cannot imagine the splendor. I would be interested if someone tried to make a movie out of that great documentary, The Revelation. And so God has always used technology. He's the master of it. God's always used visuals. He's always used audio to teach us in so many ways. And so this isn't really anything new in that regard. But I would like you to think about this. I have a couple of tools here. This one was given to me as a wedding gift a long time ago. It's called an old timer. Any of you gentlemen recognize what this tool is? Jim, you know what that is, don't you? That's a pocket knife. Is that a good tool, Aaron, or a bad tool? Good tool? Could it be used as a bad tool? Could somebody get hurt with something like this? Probably not even allowed to carry them in your pocket at school anymore. Things have changed. Tool, good tool, bad tool. I would suggest to you it's morally neutral. It is totally dependent upon who uses it and for what they use it. But as far as a tool, it's just a tool. And so it's not either good or bad. And I've got a tool in this pocket too. Now some of you younger people might laugh. This is an old iPhone. I'm not even remembering which one it is. But it works for me. And so is this a good tool? I'll pick on this side. A good tool, bad tool? It all depends. Yeah, you see him. He got a jump on you because he had some background. Yeah, and so it really all depends upon who uses it and how or for what purpose they use it. And so it's just a tool, and we're not bashing the tool, but we're going to think about how can I use it for good and be aware of the fact that it has some dangers involved as well. So we want to be thinking about that as we walk through this study. Jesus wants us to be very critical in our evaluation of how we use tools and what we take into our mind. And so he says, do you not yet understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated? But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man. It's what comes out of us that defiles us. I want us to think about I learned today that some of you had some West Virginia roots. It was kind of neat to know about Eliza and Andrew and all of that Yeader Baker connection from back in the hills. But one thing that was really important back in those hills was clean water. And there were springs that would come out of the hillside, just like it does in Raleigh County. And what you would want to do is you would want to build something to protect your water source from contamination. You didn't want the hogs to get in there. You didn't really want anything else to get in there and muddy up the water. And so you would build something around that spring. And our heart is much like that. Sometimes we give more attention to our distilled and purified water that we put in our mouth than what we allow into our heart. And so Proverbs 4 says, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. We want to be really concerned about not simply what they put in our water here in the county, but what we put in our mind. And we're reminded then in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 that we are the temple of the living God. It's to be a pure, holy place. As God has said, I will live with them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Therefore, come out from them and be separate, says the Lord. Touch no unclean thing, and I'll receive you. Principles about holiness of thought and holiness of character and conduct are... Did that do something on the screen? Sorry, I touched the pad instead of... Can you come up here and fix that for me? Sorry. Touch the touchpad. You knew you couldn't trust me. Speaking of technology, let me read this passage in Ephesians chapter 5. So I'll try not to touch that pad anymore. And maybe get a hold of this little thing over here. Protect those mistakes. Ephesians chapter 5 says, have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather even expose them. That's part of our work tonight. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. So we want to be very wise with the technologies that we have available to us. You know, some of us would just rather not have a smartphone or dumb phone. And some of us would rather not have an iPad. Some of us would rather not have a laptop. And that is perfectly fine. Some of you know my brother Kevin. And Kevin would tell you he doesn't want anything to do with the computer. He doesn't want anything to do with a smartphone. He doesn't have one. He has a flip phone. And that's just fine. Whether you ever have a smartphone, ever have a computer, ever touch a laptop, those are personal choices. And you are fine to not go into that realm. It will have some economic influence in the future as far as employment, however. So I want to ask you about this particular presentation and ask you, is this a good use of technology or is it not?
Welcome to 3-Minute Bible Study on Biblical History. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and God created man and woman. Creation was good. Then Adam and Eve rebelled and fell from God. Wickedness increased, and judgment came in the flood on all but Noah and those in the ark. Noah's descendants were dispersed at the Tower of Babel, and God chose Abram and his seed to receive the promised land, to become a nation, and to bless all nations. The promise continued through Abraham's son Isaac and his son Jacob, also known as Israel. Jacob had 12 sons, one of which would rise to the right hand of power in Egypt. The Israelites came down to live in Egypt, but later became enslaved for about 400 years. Through Moses, God delivered them and made a covenant with them at Sinai, where they received the law and instructions for the tabernacle. But being unfaithful, they were detained in the wilderness for 40 years, and the next generation took the promised land under Joshua. Judges then led the people until Samuel's day when Saul was appointed the first king of Israel. After Saul's rejection, God chose David to be king and promised that his seed would be a son to God, would build a house to God, and his kingdom would be established forever. David's immediate son Solomon did build the temple, but the promise of a kingdom forever would be part of the messianic hope in Israel. After Solomon's death, the nation divided into northern and southern kingdoms, both largely unfaithful and ignoring the prophet's calling for repentance. As prophesied, both nations fell, Israel to Assyria in 722 BC and Judah to Babylon, along with the destruction of the temple in 586. After the Babylonian captivity, many returned to the land with Zerubbabel and Ezra and rebuilt the temple, followed by Nehemiah, who rebuilt the city walls. 400 years pass, and Israel looks for the promised Messiah to come. The New Testament brings us to the first century with John the Baptist announcing that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And he identifies Jesus of Nazareth as the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world. The four Gospels record the teachings of Jesus, his work with the apostles, and the miracles that identify Jesus as the Messiah or Christ. At the end of his life, he establishes the Lord's Supper, surrenders to his enemies, and his disciples flee. In fulfillment of Psalm 22 and Isaiah 53, he is tortured, crucified, and buried. But on the third day, the tomb is found empty, and he appears to the apostles. He tells them to wait for the Holy Spirit, and he ascends to the Father. Acts 2 records the day of Pentecost, when the Spirit falls on them, and Peter preaches Jesus as the risen Christ. 3,000 Jews are baptized that day in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of their sins. The church grows quickly, but soon faces intense persecution from opponents like Saul, later known as Paul. But after encounter with Jesus, Paul himself is converted and begins preaching Christ, helping spread the gospel far beyond Israel. The letters of Paul, along with texts from James, Peter, John, etc., round out the rest of the New Testament. That's your 3-minute overview of Old Testament and New Testament history.
Good tool, bad tool. In my experience in working with students that are on a university campus, sometimes they never had a Bible, but most of them have a phone, and most of them have access to the internet, and they can just punch in 3-minute Bible study, and they can learn the history of God's message to his people from Adam through Revelation. And that's a doorway for them to begin discovering God's message through Jesus. Good tool. Scott Smelser does a great job with several of these. Please put it in your notes, 3minutebiblestudy.com. It'll be a great tool for you as you begin talking with young people who may never carry a Bible like this. The Bible that they have is on their phone. It's on their iPad. And they use it very well and very skillfully. And we need to embrace that good technology. You may not realize how much technology has been available to us. In 1844, Samuel Morse came up with the telegraph. And he sent that first message from Washington, D.C. to Baltimore, Maryland. And by 1866, the telegraph had been laid across the Atlantic Ocean from the U.S. to Europe. And although the telegraph now has fallen out of widespread use, by the start of the 21st century, it was replaced by the telephone, the fax machine, and now the internet that's laid the groundwork for the communication revolution that we now experience. On May 24th, 1844, here was his first tapped out message. What hath God wrought? Numbers 23:23. He saw God's use of that skill and that technology and sought to make good use of it. But by the 1890s, the telegraph experience had gotten out of control because the telegraph operators began flirting and saying things by Morse code to each other on the telegraph. And so there had to be a book that came out called Wired Love. And you thought the 21st century was where he learned about wired love. That was the 1890s. And so there had to be rules and regulations for all of the telegraph operators to make sure they were doing things ethically and correct with this new technology. We want to think about some consumption statistics as we consider how much we take in from a technological standpoint, from media, and whether or not we're captivated by media. And so the elders of this church have decided it's worth it for you to hear from people who have been addicted to various types of media and how they've had to work through to overcome those addictions. And so we're going to notice that here in a moment. And Jim's doing a great job of trying to get us ready. I'm going to try to be prepared this time as well. This documentary is captivated by
media saturated society. The screen time for the average American child is over 53 hours a week.
The digital age has swept into young adults' lives like a tidal wave.
Media has taken my generation captive. media was very big in helping me to escape the realities of my life.
I was captivated by television. It dictated what I was going to do and when I was going to do it.
It's a bigger addiction than drugs a lot of times.
There is a great need for concern.
Have we entered a techno-utopia or a virtual prison?
Pretty much my life, like, consisted of media in some way, shape, or form.
I just got so sucked up in it, it just kind of took over part of my life.
Is our social experience richer and deeper, or more shallow and artificial?
I was on Facebook every day, all day long.
We stand a chance of roboticizing relationships.
The trivia of youth are amplified by these digital tools.
Men are trying to escape into the world of games.
We've arranged the culture to trick their brains into thinking that they've done something when in fact they haven't.
You can't think, I'll watch and I'll listen, I won't do.
Is there hope of finding freedom?
I found that there's more of freedom like without media, in all honesty.
When I was able to let go, there was such incredible freedom.
This world would be a completely different place if we weren't all glued to a screen.
There's a need to break free from these chains that bind us.
When you unplug, all of these things that are part of God's design for us begin to be restored.
This particular documentary was introduced to me by a friend of mine who came to Christ as a college student. He has a master's degree in electrical engineering. He now has 5 children. I think 6, maybe real soon 6. And he was concerned as his young family was beginning that he not have them be paralyzed by the addiction of the medias that he had to work with all the time. Still does. He's quite a skilled engineer. But he, as a young Christian, could see the dangers for his children of the addictive qualities of several types of media. And so he introduced this to me. I have been assigned to speak on this subject in many different places because elders of churches are really concerned with what's happening within congregations in regard to those addictions. So let's think a little bit about the consumption statistics that we just heard presented to us. There are more TVs than children per household. Recent update was that there are more TVs than people per household. Kirby Anderson, as you heard him speak, says we spend as children 18,000 to 22,000 hours of television by the time we're 18 years of age. Parents comment to teachers. Some of you are teachers. My wife has been a teacher for many years. Parents comment to teachers about the amount of time TV's watched at night in the child's bedroom. They say, my children are not being able to perform in school. My children aren't alert because they're watching TV too late at night in their bedroom. Now, I hope there's a pause in the mind of parents right now. Dr. Walsh, that you heard him speak as a neurologist, said that the average child spends over 53 hours a week with screen time. Now, please be aware that that's not just TV, that's your iPad, that's your cell phone, that's all different kinds of screens, 53 hours per week. He said we're hardwired to pay attention to things that move, that are emotionally stimulating. And he uses an illustration. If there was a mouse that got loose in here, and the mouse ran down, everybody would either be standing up on the pews, screaming, screeching, or whatever, but nobody would be listening to what I'm saying because you're going to watch the movement. You're going to watch that mouse, and you're going to watch to see where he goes. And we're just trained. Our brain is hardwired to watch things that move, motion stimulated. I want you to also be aware, and this is simply research of doctors, particularly pediatricians. They are recommending, like Dimitri Christakis, you can check his website, you can check the American Association of Pediatrics. They recommend, and I know moms and dads, this is really tough to take in, but they recommend no screen time for children under 2 years old. And I'm thinking, as a grandparent even, when do you go to the bathroom? When do you get a shower? When do you get any time at all for yourself if you can't put something in front of the child to keep him occupied while you're trying to take care of business? So that's a challenge. I own that right up front. But what they're suggesting is that when children have spent so much time in front of a screen in those very early years, that prefrontal cortex is not developed. In fact, it's not fully developed until we're in our mid-20s. That we have trouble with concentration. We have trouble with focus. Focus concentration is going to be limited if we're always emotionally stimulated in our observance. I mentioned to you last night a little bit about some of those addictions and some of those neurochemicals. Oxytocin, dopamine are two of those that have a lot of effect on what we connect to. And those things can happen in very young children. The book Hooked, H-O-O-K-E-D, by two pediatricians would be a helpful read in that regard. The more TV before age three, the less attention span in school is what the medical professionals are telling us. Yet what they're also telling us is the things that help children the most to learn and to be able to focus attention are reading, you reading to the children or the grandchildren, and you singing to them. That children actually learn best by having messages read to them or sung to them. And so what we do as parents and grandparents by singing all these spiritual songs and reading all these excellent documents, children's books that are healthy and wholesome, children's booklets that are teaching about God, those are the best things you can do for your kids. And that's exactly what God said in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 6. And so Pew Research has expressed a concern of parents in regard to their teens not getting enough sleep and the parents not getting enough sleep, because for some of us, our phone does some kind of a ding sound, makes some kind of a sound when we get a message. And a lot of teens are taking their cell phone to bed, putting it under their pillow in case they get a message at night. And when that message goes off, they hear it, their parents hear it, and nobody's resting. But a lot of teens, I'm not going to say it's just girls, but a lot of teens are really concerned to find out whether they're still in a relationship when they go to school the next morning. Or who is or isn't in a relationship the next day. And so they leave their phone on all night long in their bedroom under their pillow. I want to suggest to you the ability of parents to take control of the technology so that they can help their children rest and they can protect their children. We know of families who are very deliberate about collecting their children's phones. I'm thinking of a couple in the state of Tennessee. They take their children's phones at night and they keep them in a central section in the house where the kids can't get to them. And there's some reasons for that. I'm just going to go ahead and share some of that now with you. Is you may not be aware, but the typical age of young men being exposed to pornography is between 9 and 10 years of age. And almost always the vehicle by which they're exposed to pornography is the cell phone. And even if your children don't have a cell phone, it's not recommended for anyone younger than 12 by most pediatricians, their friends at school have one. And they say, here, look at this. And so there's so many challenges for our kids that we didn't have to deal with. We might have to deal with a pocket knife. But our kids are dealing with pornography at age 9 and 10. You may be unaware that among churched people, recent estimates are that 6 out of 10 men who are churched people, go to church at least 3 times a month, see pornography at least once a week. And almost always the vehicle, when questioned about those kind of things, the vehicle is, oh, no, I don't see it on my computer. And the men are telling you the truth because they see it on the screen on their phone day after day after day. So there's some helpful tools. One is you may just need to throw the thing away. You may just need to go back to a flip phone. I know guys who, as they're dealing with those addictions, they go back to a flip phone that doesn't have that access to the internet. That's a really good choice. Jesus said, if your eye offends you, pluck it out. If your right hand offends you, cut it off. That's a process of getting rid of those challenges. And so Mr. Christakis has taken a lot of heat for saying no screen time for the little ones. The video games. As many men who seem to be addicted to pornography, there are probably at least that many who are addicted to video games. And what Jeff Myers says about that, and you heard him say some of it, in regard to that prefrontal cortex, he said video games stimulate the pleasure center of the brain. You have a sense of accomplishment without ever doing anything. It's much like the addiction of crack cocaine. Young men are passive because we have arranged the culture of the brain into thinking they've done something when in fact they have not. And so, not just young men, but often young men in their teens and college age and 20s spend hours and hours late into the night playing video games, and they are exhausted by 7 o'clock in the morning. They feel like they have worked all night long. And they've been in a fight in those video games, and I mean that very literally. And so the video games cause different synapses to fire in the brain and reroute that so that there are addictive behaviors. Nielsen reminds us, and these are old stats, these are almost 8 years old. Nielsen did a survey of teens and said that they, on average, produce 3,339 text messages per month. Texting is the preference of most people today. Not talking, but texting. One of the things that that does is, as Mark Bauerlein indicates, is it tends to cut out the parents. Rather than listening to your parents, you screen out your parents. You totally remove them and you do not communicate with them. And moms and dads oftentimes don't know what their children are doing on their phone. And there are no protective schedules set up. Net Nanny is probably one of the best to help us, to help protect our children. I have plenty of documentation with me. You're welcome to it. But as you can see on the screen, when Tim Winters asked about the effect of television, he said it's toxic. Some of you have deliberately chosen not to have cable in your home. I applaud you for that. Cindy and I made that choice a long time ago, and it has been a tremendous blessing. So as we move from the consumption, we want to think about what it is that we're seeing. And young people, you may be under the wrong impression that because you know how to delete your history on your computer, that you think that that history is gone. You may be under the assumption that because Snapchat takes away that picture within 30 seconds after you've seen it, please be advised that other people who receive those can take a screenshot and keep it forever and send it to whomever they want. Please be advised that when major corporations are going to interview you for a job in the future, they're going to have your whole digital history. It's called a digital footprint. It's all going to be available to them, and they're going to scroll. If you're going to work for Dell Corporation, they're going to scroll and they're going to know every place you've been all your life, whatever you've seen on a digital format, even though you thought you erased it from your history. And so these are matters of which we need to have some concern. Mr. Phil Chalmers spent 25 years researching the effects of violence in videos. Some men are not tempted by the sensual and the pornographic aspects, but they are so consumed by the violence of many of the video games. I think it was Brian mentioned yesterday, Fortnite, 40 million participants in Fortnite, which schools, principals, administrators, and teachers are pleading with parents, please don't allow your children to play Fortnite. Toxic is the word used by those who are aware. Some of us grew up in a time when we almost never went to the movies. In fact, going to the movies was kind of frowned upon. In 1968... a rating system was developed for movies. Category R movies had never been shown in the public in the United States. In the last fourth of the 20th century, there were 12 times more R-rated movies than G-rated movies produced. But the G-rated movies produced 11 times more profit than the R-rated movies. It was not about what movies made money. It was about what movies changed the culture of the people. And so those producers care not whether they got enough money to pay for what they'd done. They wanted to change the way we thought about it. And could it be that we actually today think, well, I can watch an R-rated movie and it just doesn't affect me. And that may well be true because we have seen it, we've heard it, we've become numb to the vulgarity, we've become numb to the violence. We don't even see it, we don't even hear it anymore. And so we can know precisely what a movie's going to present to us before we ever go to it. Kids in Mind is a great tool. Plugged In is another really good tool. You can know exactly the vulgarity, you can know the violence, you can know the nudity, you can know all of those things before your child goes to the movie. Or you go to the movie if you want to know. When we say it doesn't affect me, I want you to think about advertisers. They think it does affect you. In fact, advertisers on the day of the Super Bowl spend $3.5 million for a 30-second advertisement. They think it does affect you. In fact, they invest millions of dollars because they know it affects you. They know it affects me. And so when Halo 3 came out, $170 million was spent in the United States in 24 hours for that game. Grand Theft Auto 4, estimated $230 million in the first 24 hours. Call of Duty Black Ops, $360 million in the first 24 hours. I'm not trying to create a frenzy in your mind, but I've had young men with tears, bringing boxes of video saying, please, take it away. Please destroy it. They know it's a toxic poison and they're asking somebody, please get rid of this. Somebody paid that money for those games. And you know, I thought Grand Theft Auto was, oh, well, you must steal cars. And one of the guys at Purdue, when he walked out of service, said, oh no, Alan, it's a lot worse than stealing cars. And then when I learned that deacons and congregations are playing Black Ops at lunch, at work, and realizing the darkness and the violence of those videos, and we're paying $300 million in the first 24 hours to get that new game. That's addictive. It's addictive. Battle Royale by Fortnite, 40 million participants. They're shooter videos. They have Avatar. I remember just as if it were yesterday, a little boy only in his shorts playing the game. He had his headset on and he's killing people and killing people and killing people. And his buddy seeing who he can kill faster than he can kill them. And then last year in Alabama, when I presented this information, a man said, what you do is you reset. It's called respawning. You kill all these people and then you just reset the button and then you can kill them again. And we think that we've got to get rid of the guns. Respawning. You see, I know a little bit about what a 30-06 will do even at 200 yards. And I know when that bullet goes through the heart of that deer's not going to get up and I can't respawn. But young people, and not just young people, who play video games become so numb to the killing that goes on that they think, oh, if I take a AK-47, that I can just pull that trigger and nobody's going to die. They're mistaken. But they're addicted because they played those games for years and years. And you know the history of that. Some of you have military background. Phil Willis, an Army chaplain, commented on the trauma of one of his soldiers. He came in and he said, I just can't rest. I just can't sleep. I haven't been outside the wire. You know what that means. But what has happened is this mechanic in the Army was playing video games all night and he was so addicted that he was an emotional basket case because of video games, not because of the Afghanis. And so it's like an insurgent that infiltrates the cafeteria and then he sets the bomb off and lots of people die. That's what's happening in our culture. Robert Pittman made that observation, as you can see. He said, we don't just shoot for 14-year-olds, we own them. So media is not neutral. Their objective is not simply to entertain, but it is to control. And I appreciate what Phil Chalmers says when he says that God does not think it's cool when we entertain ourselves with violence, murder, and mayhem. Psalm 11, verse 5 says, the Lord hates the one who loves violence. Proverbs 6 reminds us there are 6 things the Lord hates, 7 that are detestable to Him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil. There are some wonderful things for us to learn from technology. And God knew it and He designed it. He says you got to put it in front of your kids' face all the time. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Put them on your screensaver. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. There is so much good with technology. Put that in front of your children to learn more about God and good and being pure in heart. So besides consumption, I want us to think about the consequences. Did you hear that young African-American lady in the trailer? So I was addicted to Facebook. I was on it all day long. She was disconnected from God, as you listen further into her interview. She admitted it was hard to disconnect from Facebook. It was so enchanting. It allowed you a persona that was not real. You can make yourself look really good on a video, but that's not real. It's a shallow surface relationship. In fact, in Indianapolis, in WTHR, they had a study on social networking, and they found that in England, 1 out of 3 divorces came from Facebook. Relationships that were reestablished on Facebook. It's 1 out of 5 in the United States, at least as of a few years ago. And one particular attorney, she said, there have been several cases that I've been involved in where they find out, lo and behold, their spouse has a dating profile. I see a lot of couples coming in with affairs, or sometimes emotional affairs, that are a result of Facebook or Twitter. It often starts with a simple friend's request. The biggest thing I've seen is people reconnecting with people from their past. Innocently saying, oh, this is somebody that I went on a date with once when I was in college. But then you see it completely pull the marriage apart. There's a reason why these people are in our past. Perhaps an appropriate 21st century addition to what Jesus had to say is, if Twitter causes me to sin, log off. Maybe more than log off. If Facebook is causing you to sin, maybe shut down your account. Get out of Facebook until, if ever, it can be used appropriately. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. Jared Jackson says lousy friends will corrupt even the best of people. We tend to act like those whom we frequently visit, whether virtually or in reality. We are entertaining ourselves to death. And so if your teenager hangs out on social media with girls that like to flash from behind private doors in their own home while parents snooze in front of the TV, don't be surprised to find pics of your own teen soon on display for all of Twitter's 200 million millennials to comment on with the most hurtful words imaginable. I don't want you to leave frightened. I want you to leave prepared. But I don't want you to leave naively thinking this doesn't happen in churches of Christ. And I don't want you to think it doesn't happen for anybody who's older than 15 or 16 years old. Because I do know of people in churches of Christ who are trying to serve the Lord, but have in times, because of the temptations, have sexted. That simply means they're taking their pictures of themselves and sending them to somebody else to attract them to them. This isn't just child's play. These are adults who are being involved in very sexually immoral behaviors through video technology. And it's happening among us, not simply out there. One grieving parent told me he just wished he had not given his girls' cell phones when he did. Cindy and I hiked back down to the canyon rim outcropping at Pipestem on Saturday. We're glad we did, because we remember when our girls were little that that was a dangerous zone. We didn't want them falling another 500 feet into the Bluestone. But what was especially frightening was in the crevice there was a copperhead. And our older daughter saw it first, and so we moved back from that crevice there, and we checked again Saturday. He wasn't there then. But Cindy, actually, we decided to take a picture. And she dropped her phone almost in the very same crevice. I ask you men, if there's a copperhead in your house, do you just go to sleep? How long can that copperhead roam around in your house before you got to deal with it? I don't know about you, but the last time I saw a copperhead, there was a 12 gauge in my hands. And one of us had to go. You know what I mean? And so I just, to think about placing a copperhead in your child's bedroom every night. He doesn't bite every night. But three or four nights a week, he slays your son. I have young men coming to me, just tears, just please. I just wish my dad would take the cable away. I just wish my dad would take my phone away. Because the deep addiction is just destroying their mind. But dads are asleep. And he says, oh, he can deal with it. He just had to man up. If there's a copperhead in your house, he needs to go. So children can well survive without smartphones. They have for millennia. I know you want to know where your kids are, and I know it's really helpful, especially having girls. You want them to be able to get a hold of you, and you want to be able to get a hold of them. Those old flip phones can do the job. So, questions for us to ask ourselves. Does what I watch, what I take in, what I read, does it build me up? Does it strengthen me? Or does it entertain me? Or does it destroy me? Does it result in peace and tranquility in my mind and in my home? And so there's an unbreakable link, as Andrew told us, between what we see, hear, think, and what we do. Briefly, and you've listened very kindly. School administrators and teachers have a real challenge. They always have. But one particular headmaster, a principal of a school, had six students brought to him with the claim that they were ADHD. Please be advised that there are students who need medication, and the medications can be a tremendous help. And do not feel guilty for taking them, or for administering them, or for prescribing them. But they're not always the first step. And so in this particular case, it was recommended that they receive three nutritious meals every day, strict bedtimes of 9 p.m., must have been Eastern time, video time, screen time, was recommended at 30 minutes per week, 1 hour of exercise every day, 3 hours of exercise on the weekends with parental participation, and the result in this case of those six young people described as ADHD patients, none of them needed medication. Now, that's not always the case, but it could be that what we need is the structure of a clean, pure, healthy life. And when you tell your kids we're going to unplug, that's going to be a war. It's sometimes a war for us to go without 2 or 3 days checking my phone. Perhaps we could plan a week of recreation outside. The benefits of being unplugged are considerable. The communication that happens between parents and children, the sense of peace and tranquility, the mental stimulation, the meditation that develops. Gaining control of what can be an addiction is a powerful battle. But don't fear the cost to change. Create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. I may need to shut that TV off. I may need to close that laptop. I may need to turn off that phone. I may need to destroy it. I have known of college men who've actually taken their laptop and just broken it to to pieces. If you saw the movie Fireproof, you know Caleb's battle. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. We have to take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And so my prayer for me and for you is that our love would abound in real knowledge and all discernment, so that we may approve the things that are excellent in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ. I want to tell you, there's a lot of good things going on with technology. I do Facebook studies. I do FaceTime studies, I should say, with my Apple phone. There are Skype studies going on all over the world. My brother-in-law studies with lots of Brazilians every week by means of this wonderful modern technology. I'm thinking, Kathy, actually, of the Peyton City Church right now. As you're thinking about what Brian Price does and teaches, last year, the count was 123 countries are hearing his sermons based on technology. I think it's another congregation where 9 people were brought to Christ simply because they went to the website, clicked on the website, connected with a real human being, began studies. I teach people in Pennsylvania because of somehow they found about our correspondence courses on the website. Young people typically are not going to walk through these doors without checking you out on your website first. I wish it were different. But that's our experience. That's our observation. So if Jeremy starts talking with you about, yeah, we really need to update our website. We really need to do more to share the message. We really need to maybe duplicate some CDs. We really need to make this live. He's talking about sharing the gospel with the technologies that God has given us. And I'm so thankful that young men can come up here and fix my messes. God has given us tools. Let's not bury those tools in the sand. Let's use them to God's glory and to teach. And everybody who ever gets a phone in America has YouVersion. They've got the Bible in several different translations, free, no-cost apps right there on your phone. You can listen to the Bible while you're driving to work, and it'll be read to you in whichever you want it, in English or if you want it in American. And so all kinds of opportunities are available to us. And so from everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be required. We have great tools. We can learn how to use them and implement them well, but they can be dangerous tools. And we have to learn how to wisely protect with those tools, just like we would with that pocket knife. We wouldn't just hand that to you, roll it over here and say, cut away, son. We'd be teaching him how to use that. It's a tool. So is the technologies that God has brought into the 21st century. Again, your challenge is, how is it fair? As I assess the congregation tonight, I'm thinking most of you are already in Christ. You may not be. But what Jesus wants you to know is he shared his message all over the world, and he wants everyone to come and to believe and be baptized. And he wants us to use whatever technologies we have available to us to announce his good news. And let us do that to his glory and for the good of all mankind. If you're not in Jesus, won't you come to him in obedience to him as we stand in his name?